Hello and welcome to episode 27 of the Arsenal Beat, the only Arsenal podcast which brings together the journalists and reporters who cover the club on a regular basis. I'm Simon Collings of the Evening Standard and I'm joined by the Telegraph's Sam Dean and Mark Manbrines of PA Media. Now we see a return to Premier League action this weekend following the international break with the rearranged Euro 2020 finals now on the horizons. Hopefully Arsenal will have a few players in it, Sam. Looking through the squads, I think the standout ones who are certainly going to play a prominent role, Granit Xhaka, Kieran Tierney, the main two. But other than that, maybe Saka, Bernd Leno should go, Cedric. What about those players do you see making an impact? I mean, Xhaka is probably the main one in terms of someone who's a captain of their country and plays a leading role.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually, because when you just kind of assume that Arsenal would have quite a big number of players going to the Euros, given the size of the club and the stature and the sort of history of number of players they've had who are internationals. But there really aren't many. It's sort of quite striking how few players they've got who will be playing regularly. I mean, you mentioned Leno. I don't think he's going to get much action. Bukayo Saka might go, but how much action he gets seems unclear. I don't think he's going to start for England. Cedric as well. Cedric started one game for Portugal this international break, but not the other. So he's more likely to be a squad option, you'd assume, especially given he wasn't involved for the previous few international camps. So yeah, it pretty much leaves you with Tierney, who obviously is fundamental to the Scotland team, and Xhaka, who, yeah, as you say, is the captain for Switzerland. And I'm depending on travel restrictions, I'm due to be going to Baku to cover Wales this summer. And they are in Switzerland's group, along with Turkey and Italy, which is feels a pretty fearsome group for Wales to get out of, and also probably for Switzerland to get out of, given Turkey, by all accounts, are now quite good. They've got quite a good team coming together. So, yeah, Xhaka's one to watch. I think he'll be speaking a lot in the summer. I'm sure he'll be leading his team and, you know, trying to do what he does for Arsenal on a regular basis, which is stand forward as one of their natural leaders. So, yeah, from Arsenal's point of view, I think he might be the most interesting one to watch, along with Tierney as well, but... But yeah, those two primarily, in my view.
Yeah, Xhaka is normally pretty vocal, isn't he, in the media as well. And I think if he's captaining Switzerland, he's someone we could hear quite a lot of during the tournament. What about Saka, Mark? Because I think any Arsenal fan, I think before this international break, would have had him pretty nailed on in their England squad because of his versatility, because of his form. But he's obviously missed all these games. Is he safe in Southgate's squad?
I don't think he is, to be honest. I think, you look, it's only going to be a 23-man squad unless that changes. There's talk that UEFA might bump that number up just because of the amount of football that everyone's playing. But we've spoken about it on here before, that where does he play for England, really? You know, he got those four caps he got all came playing at wing-back, where he excelled earlier in the season. But Arteta now plays him basically on the wing every week, doesn't he? He was called up for a forward this time, but couldn't play. And you just think Marcus Rashford, Jadon Sancho, Jack Grealish all weren't involved due to injury. You'd imagine all three of those would go to the Euros. So I don't know at this moment in time, if everyone's fit, if there's room for Saka to go as a forward. Now, do you squeeze him in knowing that he's a utility man and can do that role as left wing back? Again, it doesn't work in his favour that for these games we've just seen Southgate's played a back four. Now, he's not going to go as a left-back because the options there are, he's got out-and-out left-backs in Chilwell and Shaw, you imagine, will go. But it could be that he doesn't go. And I think, on the face of it, a lot of Arsenal fans would probably call me all the names under the sun for saying that, but longevity and reasons like that might benefit Arsenal massively if he doesn't go, because he's played so much football, and these three games, even missing these three games will help him. But to have a whole summer off after what we've seen, obviously, since Project Restart, they've had hardly any time off, means that come next season, he can be fresh and ready to go for Arsenal, as opposed to going through what could be seven games with England.
I think it's slightly frustrating for Saka. Obviously, the situation has changed around left-back at England. I think if Shaw hadn't had as good a season, I think you probably take Saka as your reserve left-back and you can play as a forward. And I also think he's probably been a bit of a victim of the fact that the under-21s tournament has become this weird amalgamation where we've had the group stages already and then the knockouts was going to be in the summer. England obviously won't be part of that. I think if that had all been in the summer and there was a bit of a, a toss-up between what you do with Saka. I think you could have justifiably said, look, let's go and let him be a key player for the 21s and play a big role rather than just be a bit part player. I mean, Sam, you've written about England, obviously, the way their attack's formed up and how it's going to shape going forward. Where do you see Saka fitting into that? And do you see him fitting into that setup, for certainly for this summer anyway?
I fundamentally agree with Mark about the wing-back situation. I don't think Southgate will have necessarily ruled out playing a back three again. And I wonder if he might do that if we get through to knockout stages and play some of the better teams. In which case, I think Saka probably is a more natural left wing-back than maybe Chilwell, who hasn't played a huge amount, where he's sort of been behind Marcos Alonso, sort of wing-back position at Chelsea. And Shaw's obviously been playing in a back four. So I think Saka might well be a good option for that one. The versatility thing is key. Obviously, he can play right wing, left wing, left wing back. He could probably play right wing back too. He's even actually played occasionally right back for Arsenal in recent weeks, if you remember, sort of late on in games when they're chasing goals and stuff. I think with Saka, it's interesting because it feels almost blasphemous to say it, but he has dropped off a bit in the last month or so. I think he's not got a goal or assist for four games now, which by his standards this season is a dreadful run, which sounds ludicrous given his age, but that's how good he has been. And I don't think anyone should be surprised or will be surprised that he's picked up this niggly injury. And you know, the guy's played so many minutes. And I mean, as journalists, we were asking Arteta about this, you know, a good month or two ago, saying he's playing a lot here, Mikel. You're going to have to rest him at one point, because we've all seen before what happens when players that age play so much. Obviously, this injury doesn't seem particularly serious, and the hope is that he's back for Arsenal this weekend. But I, for one, am not surprised that he slightly dipped off and he got subbed at half-time against Tottenham, didn't he, with a slight niggle and didn't quite influence the game as you'd expect in that one. So I think there's naturally going to be dips for a player of his age, especially because he's been so good for so long. It's just if he comes back to his, you know, post-Christmas February form by the end of the season, I think it'd be pretty hard for Southgate to ignore him. And also, Mark will know this better than me, but by all accounts, Southgate really likes him. He likes his attitude, and Southgate's pretty much a school teacher who likes good students, which is quite similar to Arteta, I think. Free spirits are not unwelcome, but I think good students are preferred and good pupils, and Saka's definitely one of those. So he might see him as the sort of character he wants away for a couple of weeks, as well as, you know, obviously his footballing ability.
Yeah, I think you're right. You're spot on there, Sam, in terms of, I think you can see from the fact he was so keen to have Saka involved in the squad this past week that he actually joined up with the squad on the eve of the Poland game at the hotel. You know, that doesn't sound big, but there would have been COVID bio bubbles having to be ticked and all that kind of thing. And he was at Wembley yesterday to watch the team. He clearly, Saka is someone that Southgate really does rate. As we said, it's just, where does he fit in the team? I genuinely think that, you know, we know a lot of club fans that don't really follow international football, especially England team. We've spoken about this off air about sometimes there's almost a lack of interest in the England team, I think. But I think if you're an Arsenal fan with no particular allegiance this summer, then a lot of them will be hitching their bandwagons to Scotland and Kieran Tierney, won't they? Because he's become a bit of a cult figure at the Emirates. And, you know, I think it was three assists for Scotland the other night, wasn't it? So I get the impression he's obviously imperative to the way Scotland play. So I just think you'll have a lot of Arsenal fans, you know, wearing tartan this summer.
Yeah, I think Tierney as well is, if there's anyone who's going to love, you know, tournament football, and particularly if it becomes an opportunity for stadiums to be full again, he seems like someone absolutely reveling it. I think that Scotland team, it's an interesting one. I mean, to have probably the two best left-backs in the Premier League and lacking in other positions is a bit unfortunate for them. So where they play Tierney will be an interesting one to see. And another fullback I think Arsenal fans will be keeping on is probably Cedric Suarez. I think at the start of the season, if you'd had said, you know, out of all of Arsenal's right-backs, you know, it'll be him going to a major tournament, not Bellerin or even Maitland-Niles, who was, you know, had a very good start to the season. I don't think people would have believed you with Cedric, but he's probably warranted it, Sam, in the last 2-3 weeks, hasn't he? He's certainly come a long way. I think some Arsenal fans want him to start right back as it is, and in that Portugal team that looks quite good on paper, with him and Cancelo at fullbacks, he could have a very good summer. Obviously, he's got a bit of history with the Euros, as we know from 2016 as well.
I think saying Portugal are quite good on paper is a bit like saying Messi's quite good on paper. I mean, Portugal's squad is an absolute joke, the amount of players they've got and the depth they've got. I mean, Cedric's probably competing with João Cancelo at the right-back position, which is a fight. I think he's not going to win, which I think is fair to say. And that's not a criticism of Cedric. That's just the reality of how good Cancelo is and has been this season. But yeah, I mean, for me, I think I've been saying this for a few weeks now, trying to sound wise after the event. But I think he's offered far more than Bellerin has when he's played at right back. And actually, occasionally at left back, he's done pretty well too, Cedric, in recent weeks. And I think Cedric probably is the first choice right back for Arsenal now. Although it changes every week, and with Europa League and league matches, that you can't really tell. A bit like the centre-back position where you can't really tell who the first choice is. But I think Cedric probably is, and I think he's certainly earned that. And actually, do you remember when he signed, there was quite a lot of negative reaction, negative response from fans and from people on social media, basically because his agent's Kier Jarabchin and all the connotations that came with. But frankly, on pretty much any level, signing Cedric Suarez on a free deal from Southampton has been pretty good business in my books. He's been a good addition to the squad. He can play right back, play left back, has done so pretty well, apart from, you know, that one mistake against Villa away, which was costly. But aside from that, it's pretty rare to get a player of his quality on a free, and that's good business. And I think with Bellerin's future very much in doubt going into the summer, and I expect Bellerin will probably leave this summer, I think Cedric could easily be the first choice man next year for Arsenal, if not for Portugal, unfortunately, for him.
We've spoken a lot about versatility, haven't we, when you look at what Cedric can do and what Saka can do. And I just think someone that definitely isn't going to go, let's be honest. Do we commend him, though? Is Ainsley Maitland-Niles obviously went to West Brom thinking, I need to play games to get into the England squad. And he's arguably never been further away, even before he was capped, has he? But I don't know whether we applaud him for that or whether we think it was a bit of a silly move to make, given where West Brom are, the fact he wanted to play central midfield, where England are fine in terms of what they've got. But no, Simon, what do you think about that one with Ainsley? Because it's going to be a strange one for him, even coming back to Arsenal, isn't it? Let alone these England ambitions that he harbours.
Yeah, I think if he'd got either of the two moves that were certainly strongly mooted, seemed further along than West Brom on deadline day, I think if he'd got Southampton or Leicester, I think he would have made the right decision in leaving. I think both of those teams and playing for both of those teams, I think, could have got him onto that, you know, being in around the England squad. I think it's very difficult to be playing, other than obviously seeing Johnson from West Brom in the England squad, but to be playing for a team in the relegation places and be doing enough to convincing the manager that you're one of the best 23 players in the country is exceptionally difficult. I think if he'd been playing for Southampton, Ward-Prowse has shown it. You could see how he could get in the squad there. Same, particularly if he was at Leicester playing in that team. But I just kind of feel like playing for West Brom, I'm not sure what he was going to do there that was going to make Southgate think, wow, I've got to get him in. And same being playing in that midfield role as well. I don't think Sam Allardyce football is, if you're playing central midfield, is probably the best team to showcase your talents. I think a lot of the time the ball's going to be going over your head rather than to your feet. So I don't think it's worked out. I think you're right, he deserves to be commended for his bravery in leaving Arsenal and stepping out of the bubble. But I don't think he's going to have done enough there to warrant being anywhere near Southgate squad, which is a shame because in August time, he was very much flavour of the month. And after that Community Shield, I think a few people thought he could have a real breakout season. It's just not worked out like that.
I don't get the West Brom move at all. It struck me as somebody, you know, he had decided he wants to go and play midfield, and that was fundamentally it. You know, that is the headline.
Oh,
and
we will, space, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and we will get you to a club where you play midfield, whereas actually, playing midfield for Sam Allardyce is totally irrelevant to playing midfield for England and for Arsenal, which is obviously what he ultimately will want to do. I mean, I don't see any way in which he can progress playing midfield for Sam Allardyce and then come back to Arsenal and Mikel Arteta goes, oh yes, you've played midfield there for 6 months. And he's actually doing well. You know, he's playing fine. He's not playing badly at all. He's playing fine, but he's still playing for West Brom and they're still not a very good team. And he's not going to come back, and I don't think he's not going to suddenly be seen as this key central midfield player for Arsenal, unless there are other departures. Maybe no, and then he might leave. Dani Ceballos' loan comes up. So there will be gaps there in that sense, but it strikes me as highly unlikely. And he's another one, I think, a bit like Bellerin, who will be on the list of potential departures and raise a bit of cash. But I mean, it was a year ago that he had the chance to go to Wolves. And you have to say, I know at the time you always sort of admire the player who wants to stay and fight for his place at the club he's grown up at. But at the same time, you look and think that Wolves move would have been far better for him than what he's doing now at West Brom. But that's the, you know, that's the nature of football. The train's always moving. If you don't get on at the right time, it's hard to sometimes catch up or work your way back in. And also it depends a bit on, you know, your family situation, your advisors, whatever you've been told, whatever deals are possible in a difficult market. So yeah, I feel for him because obviously he's a good player, but I don't see this West Brom move as being as game-changing as he might have hoped.
Mm. I'm just astounded you've not been booted off the Zoom call there for saying that Arsenal are going to sell Mohamed Elneny. So
I've made a note of it. I have made a note of it. Don't worry.
That brings us on quite nicely, actually, to talking about Arsenal's Player of the Year and other season awards that we're going to be having on the Arsenal beat. I mean, this is the sort of time of year for award season in football. It comes quite early. The Football Writers Association is now starting to cast our votes for Footballer of the Year. In terms of Arsenal, guys, some categories we've got, you know, Player of the Year, Young Player of the Year, Goal of the Year, Standout Performance. If we look at Player and Young Player of the Year, for me, Mark, I'm struggling to look past Saka for both awards, really. Certainly Young Player of the Year, I think he wins that comfortably. Are there any others you want to throw in there for Player of the Year? I mean, maybe Gabriel, Tierney, Xhaka, Luiz, to an extent. I don't know. What do you think in terms of those names and who you would have as your Player of the Year?
Sorry, can I just say, how on earth has Mohamed Elneny led to this conversation? You said that's a good time to cross over to our awards of the season.
I mean, maybe, are we talking about
the goal of the goal? Yeah, exactly.
Goal of the season. He's number one, two, and three. He's exactly. Got that wrapped up.
We're christening the Golden Season Award the Mohamed Elneny Banger Award. So that's why it's a good segue. I think he's just too old for Young Player of the Year as well, sadly. But Simon, I'm completely with you. I think, you know, we're going to have a bit of input for ourselves and hopefully some listener interaction with these awards, obviously our first ones. Does anyone pip Saka to either of those awards? Definitely not the Young Player of the Year. That's going to be nailed on, isn't it? But I just think, again, I know Sam was talking in regards to England, that he has dropped off a bit of late, hasn't he? But there was a point where he was the shining light in a very, very bang average Arsenal team this season, I think, almost week in, week out. And to carry that kind of weight of expectation and responsibility at his age and to still deliver wherever you've been asked to play, some of those positions where he's never really played at any level of football, and putting the kind of performances he has, I just think shows it's almost, with all due respect, it's almost so un-Arsenal-like, isn't it? His approach at the moment. But I just think he wins Player of the Year, hands down. I mean, young player, you could look at Smith Rowe, but I think it's a little bit too late in the day for him that he came into the side. Although, as I know you spoke about before, Simon, that definitely coincided with the upturn in form, you know, so you've got to give him that. But yeah, I think you touched on the only other person I think might come close is Gabriel. So I think it's like a double salvo for me.
Yeah, I was going to say Gabriel's the one who's got a shot, I'd say, compared to Saka. Let's say, for example, Saka's injury doesn't quite clear up. He doesn't quite rediscover his form in the next few weeks, which, you know, is very possible for a player his age, as we've discussed. I think Gabriel, after his little mid-season dip, sort of around the time he had COVID issues and sort of lost his place in the team a bit, I think, you know, first few months he was brilliant, and then last few games as well, he's sort of come back to that form, scored a great goal in the Europa League, was superb against Tottenham with that last minute block. So I think it's he's the signing of the season, Gabriel, but it'd be hard to knock Saka off that perch at this point.
Whoa. You're not including Martin Odegaard in your signing of the season.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. I can I retract that immediately. as a self-confessed Odegaard diehard now, I probably need to say that Odegaard is, yeah, fair point. I think summer signing of the season. There you go. I've clarified it.
I thought you might have done Odegaard player of the season. I thought you might have just gone straight into it.
Yeah, his goal against, who was his goal against as well? That was an appalling finish, wasn't it? Spurs, yeah, wasn't it? The deflected goal against Tottenham might make it into your list of goal of the season, I suppose.
What do you mean appalling finish? That was one of those Ozil deliberate scuffs. Topping it into the ground. The goalie was deceived.
Yeah, Telegraph
report, genius.
Telegraph report said it was rifled into the bottom corner. with the young player thing, I mean, they've got to remember Saka's younger than Smith Rowe as well, which is quite ridiculous. And I think the thing with him is because his form has been so good and consistently so good, we're sort of saying he's dropped off, but he's actually still playing fine. But it's just the level he was at. I think particularly for that run after sort of Boxing Day, when they sort of clicked into gear, Saka was, along with Smith Rowe, at the heart of that revival, where he was suddenly becoming really talismanic. I remember that Southampton game away from home that we were at during the week, and you're just watching him, and the Brighton game as well, just before the turn of the year, where it was like the tactics were basically just give the ball to Bukayo and see if he can turn the game, win it for us. So I think he'll shade it. I think someone like Xhaka is a bit of an unsung hero, but he just has those moments where he takes five steps back after he's taken ages to go forward. So I'll be surprised if the listeners go beyond Saka for either of those. But the goal of the season so far, I mean, I think we should keep this open because I've got a feeling Thomas Partey is going to bang one into the top corner. probably in the Europa League final. That's my prediction. He's going to score one. But I was trying to have a look through before we came on. And the one that was standing out for me was the Saka goal against West Brom, the one where it was a lovely team move.
That's number three, isn't it? That's number three, I assume.
That's my goal of the season. I know there's Hamid Elneny and Olympiakos with the Greek myth and all whatever, you know, Greek tragedy, blah, blah, blah. But I can't think of a better goal that encapsulates what Arsenal want to do under Arteta than that Saka goal. I'm happy for someone to prove me wrong.
Yeah, I mean... Listen, Sam, let me get this off my chest. I completely agree, believe it or not. El Nene is a scorer of great goals. He's not a great goal scorer, as they say about a lot of people. But they're just individual, absolute, just, I want to swear quite badly, but they are just absolutely wonderful strikes from an individual level. But if you're talking about this almost DNA of Arsenal, it's those team goals, isn't it? Sam and I have, you know, we've known each other for years, we've been friends for years, but we will always argue about Aubameyang against Leicester or Ramsey against Fulham, and I'm a Ramsey Fulham man and he's an Aubameyang Leicester man. But that Saka goal against West Brom was of that kind of ilk, wasn't it? So yeah, that's definitely going to be up there and probably going to get the bronze, isn't it? Let's be honest.
I'd agree absolutely on the sort of what it symbolised as, you know, the young players playing an Arsenal way, and it was, you know, Arteta ball in action. But I don't think I'd argue ahead of the West Brom goal. Well, actually, Tierney's goal in the West Brom game was bloody good as well as an individual level. Mm. But I think you can probably argue that the significance and the sort of quality of the strike of Xhaka's free kick against Chelsea, that's got to go down as one of their best ones. Because obviously that was the game when it all turned. And it wasn't the opening goal in that game. Lacazette scored a penalty. But it was obviously a very important moment in that match. And it came just a few weeks after Xhaka's red card against Burnley. So that felt like a significant moment for him in a very significant moment for the club. So that's on my list somewhere. And we're obviously forgetting the early season team build-up goals that Aubameyang scored, sort of carbon copies against Liverpool in the Community Shield and then against Fulham on the opening day, which were, you know, classic building up from the 60-yard box, working out, big swing, which Aubameyang does the damage. I think those two were both really high-quality goals.
Mm. Yeah, I think that Chelsea performance is my contender for performance of the season. I was looking through the results. I mean, up until you get to December, you can pretty much write off any game there. There's no real good performances. But that Chelsea one was up there for me. I also thought, noted down the Leicester game, you know, at the King Power, I thought much changed team, but I thought they played very well. The Spurs performance recently, the 1-0 win at Old Trafford, more for what it symbolised than the performance first half against Wolves. I think I went for that Chelsea one in the end because of the situation around it and how much they needed to get a result. I don't know what you, Mark, is your performance of the season?
Yeah, I agree with that to the extent of what they needed. I put the United one down purely because again, at that point, they were just not doing it, were they? They hadn't beaten, they hadn't won away against the top side for so long as well, had they? I can't even remember that. I think I had normal amount of hair the last time they won away against someone any good. But also that game, that was almost the coming out party for Thomas Partey, wasn't it? If you pardon the pun, you know, I think a lot of people jumped on the bandwagon quite early on, knowing he was a great signing. And I'd always been a bit like, I think we need to rein it in a little bit. But I think that day he was absolutely immense, you know, played a very good supporting role to man of the match, Mohamed Elneny, that day. And I think that was key in those scenarios. But it's strange, isn't it? In a season where there's not been a lot of positives, like you said, that you reeled off quite a number of good performances there. I mean, they played very well against Leeds, didn't they, at home for a good period of time. Europa League-wise, second leg against Benfica, they got the job done, didn't they? So there are a few in there, definitely, where I think if you looked at the table and thought, well, they can't have had many good games this season. Actually, when they've been able to turn it on, they've actually done quite a good job, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Arsenal had quite a few good performances, quite a few good goals, and quite a few really good showings from individual players. But they've also had quite a few awful performances, conceded some awful goals, and had some awful performances from individual players. And that's the fundamental problem. They're not steady. They're not 6 out of 10, 7 out of 10 reliable. They're either 9 out of 10 or they're 4 out of 10. Or they're 9 out of 10, and they do something completely ludicrous and stupid and cost themselves a win. So they're not like a steady team. So there's always highs and lows with Arsenal, which I think makes them quite good fun to watch and cover from a neutral point of view anyway, which I thankfully am.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of what you would pick, Sam, is there any of those that stand out for you? I mean, if Arsenal had completed that performance against Wolves and David Luiz had been sent off, I think that would have been the best one for me. But I've gone for Chelsea. Marks has gone for Old Trafford. What would you pick as performance of the season?
I think the best all-round 90 minutes they played was at West Brom. But the big caveat is that it was at West Brom.
Pre-Maitland-Niles West Brom. Yeah, that's exactly.
Yeah, pre-Maitland-Niles. And they're also very good against Fulham on opening day of the season, but that was against a Fulham team, which was essentially half the team it is now. So those ones don't really count to the same extent. I think Chelsea, I'm with you, Psycho, with Chelsea, not just because of the win and the performance, but also the fact that it became the turning point for their sort of whole season, really, and for individual players. I think it was a turning point for Lacazette. Piece on that tomorrow's Telegraph, if anyone's listening. And also for Smith Rowe, obviously coming in, that was a turning point for him too. And probably for Xhaka. So, yeah, for the club and for some key players, I'm going with the Chelsea one.
It's a strange one as well, isn't it? Because I reckon Arteta would probably say the Burnley away performance he was delighted with, apart from they just couldn't put the ball in the back of the net. But I think he said after the game he thought they were great. And then the second half of West Ham, he was delighted with. So if you could stitch together a 90 minutes of an Arsenal team across the season so far, they'd be absolute world beaters, wouldn't they? But as you say, the other half of that is stitch together the worst 90 minutes, they'd be absolutely fucking appalling, wouldn't they? That's just where Arsenal are based, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that typifies it. The fact that we're wanting to stitch together that first half against Wolves, that second half against, you know, West Ham. I can't imagine on the Man City pod that we're really good for sort of 30 minutes in that Champions League game. Time now for our predictor game, Beat the Beats. Tweet us your predictions for the game at home to Liverpool to @TheArsenalBeat using the hashtag Beat the Beats. If your prediction is picked to go up against our panel and you win, you will go into the prize draw at the end of the season. So can you beat the Beats? Obviously, Liverpool this weekend, guys. I mean, Arsenal, as is quite odd for them, given where they are in the league, actually have a pretty good record against Liverpool since Arteta's taken over. The game at the Emirates last season, Mark, was something we were discussing a bit about off-air and was mentioned in the press conference today. Do you think that'll be the blueprint for how Arteta approach it this time? Or do you think Liverpool aren't that same animal that they were last season and don't need to be given quite as much respect as you normally would?
No, I don't think it is the blueprint they'll go for this time. And I think it's only partly because of this Liverpool team is almost giving an ever diminishing returns on the title winning side, aren't they? I also think Arteta's now building this Arsenal side into the image that he always wanted it to be. So we're seeing less and less of those kind of performances where you know, they have little of the ball, and basically the performances that won them the FA Cup last year. Sam mentioned it on our Arteta special last week, that he came in and he had this pragmatism of getting the best out of the players by playing a brand of football you wouldn't really expect from Arsenal or from Arteta. And I think that's how they beat Liverpool last season. But this year, I think he'll be looking to stamp his own style on the game, won't he?
Mm. I mean, obviously, we talk a lot about Liverpool, certainly in the media, Sam, you know, being a different side to what they were. Do you think that central defence, from what we were talking about a month ago, I remember everyone's, you know, we were saying how vulnerable it is. Do you think it is better now than it was, or is it still as weak and as susceptible and something Arsenal should be targeting, particularly when it's, you know, there's obviously no Virgil van Dijk in there?
Oh, definitely. You definitely would like to target it from an Arsenal point of view. And actually, you know, if you remember that game against them last season, it was actually Van Dijk who made one of the mistakes, one of the goals, I think. So if, you know, if Van Dijk can be got at, as they say, then the current Liverpool defence, all four of them, I think, given their current form, can also be got at. It'd be interesting to see whether he plays Lacazette or Aubameyang down the middle. I wonder if, given the fact that Liverpool play high line and will like to press up high, I wonder whether he might go for Aubameyang central. But then Lacazette's been playing very well and was probably their most important player behind Odegaard and Kasu Chambers against West Ham, that they would be harsh to drop Lacazette. So yeah, it'd be interesting. I'm with Mark that I think they'll play the same sort of game that they tried against Chelsea and Tottenham, in which both games, I think Emile Smith Rowe was extremely important. So his fitness will be interesting to see, given that he pulled out of the under-21s this week. So he could be a big miss in that sense. But yeah, I think it should be quite a fun game. Liverpool-Arsenal games tend to be explosive, dramatic. I believe it certainly was a year ago, the highest scoring fixture in Premier League history. So I'm expecting quite a lot of fun. And with, you know, Salah and Mane up against Arsenal's error-prone defence, there will be something going on for sure. So yes, hard to call.
Do you think that, Sam, I think every time the team sheet comes out in these Premier League games, before the Europa League games or when there are them on those Sundays, there's an expectation from fans sort of going, oh, you know, we've written this off. Yeah, we've been in the league off. We're playing. We've made five changes, six changes. Do you think Arteta, with this game, will be wary about the impact of, particularly they've just had the international break, they come into this game, and you play Liverpool and you get, you know, you weaken your team and you lose 3-0 at home. You've then put yourself so on the back foot for what is a huge stretch, Slavia Prague and those Europa League games. Do you think he will attack this perhaps more than some fans will suspect with that team selection?
Yeah, mainly because they've had 2 weeks and most of the players have still been there. A lot of them haven't been on international duty. Obviously, a few have. Tierney obviously played quite a lot. And they're... you know, Saka's fitness issues as discussed and Smith Rowe, but I don't think it's like they've had their whole squad flying around Europe playing loads of training matches. I think he's had quite a lot of time on the training ground to execute a plan. And one thing that one thing that's become very clear with Arteta is that when he devises a specific game plan for big games, it tends to go quite well. You look at the FA Cup semi-final and the final when he had specific, you know, Maitland-Niles playing left wing back was a big shock, if you remember, at the FA Cup semi-final. And thought, what on earth is he doing there? But it was all part of the grand plan. So I think when Arteta's had a few weeks to, conjure up something and work on it, and that's the key thing, to actually work on it, Arsenal tend to be better. So, yeah, I mean, I think they should be fit enough and rested enough to play strong teams in both games.
Yeah, Mark, what about a score prediction? I mean, 8 p.m. on a Saturday at the Emirates has a very sort of 7:15 Sunday vibe feel about it for me. So I'm not particularly confident. That was a sort of miserable run of 2 months of going to the Emirates on a Sunday. For me, I fancy a sort of score draw. I think maybe a 2-2. I don't know what you think, Mark. What are you fancying?
Yeah, I agree with what Sam was saying there. He's had a perfect chance to plan for this, hasn't he? But Sam also mentioned that both defences here could not be at their best. I'd actually put 2-2/3-3 in the hope that we might have something quite entertaining. And I remember back a few years ago, there were a couple of games back-to-back at the Emirates between these two that were properly high-scoring affairs. I think there was one right at the start of the season, wasn't there, where there was a lot of goals. So yeah, I'm happy to go in that kind of area of 2-2-3-3, something like that.
Fun story on that, as an aside, a story that some people may already know, it's been reported before, but I hadn't realised until recently when I interviewed him. That 4-3 on the opening day of the season a couple of years ago, I think it was Liverpool won 4-3 and Mane and Coutinho basically turned on the star second half and Rob Holding played at the back. That was Rob Holding's first ever trip to the Emirates. That was the first time he actually went to the stadium because he joined that summer and they didn't play any games or anything. He didn't go there to sign his contract. So he'd literally never been to the Emirates before and then he was there playing for Arsenal.
It showed that night as well, didn't it? He definitely didn't know where he was going.
Yeah, I remember speaking to him. He did say, second half, Coutinho and Mane were quite good, to put it bluntly. I just find that extraordinary that could be the first time a player goes to the stadium. But then again, I suppose it would be if you wouldn't go there earlier in the pre-season or whatever.
Bring back the Emirates Cup, that's all I can say, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's completely irrelevant as an aside. There was also that 3-3 draw a couple of years ago. I think it was in like December or midwinter when Ozil scored one of his little bounce shot goals, which was nice, which I always like. I actually in my head had 2-2 as well. So we've all sort of circled our minds on that one.
Perfect. I'm astounded Rob Holding hadn't been to the armory to pick up some club tat after joining the club. It was completely just taken on board. I think we'll lock in 2-2. I think the odds of it being Arsenal drawing 3-3 back to back. I mean, if anyone could do it, it is Arsenal, but that would be sensational if they had 2-3-3 draws in a row, particularly if it's in the same manner. But 2-2 is good. Yeah, get your predictions into us. See if you can beat the beat. That is all from this week's show. Please do check out our latest special, The Art of the Matter, where we look back at Mikel Arteta's career to date. But until then, stay safe.